Greetings, Tacoma. John Doherty here for KTAH 101.9's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate. We're going to be stretching the boundaries of that just a bit today, but not so far that they break. Did you ever have a fantasy that you could just go out in your driveway, down the street, jump into something like an airborne sports car and take off, go straight to where you were wanting to be, let's say downtown Seattle, and being able to get there from Tacoma in 10 or 15 minutes at 160 miles an hour? Well, we're going to be talking to Steve Tibbetts today. He's developing a vertical takeoff and landing personal air vehicle called the Ziva. Steve's working and developing right here in Tacoma. And let's find out what he's up to. So very happy to have Steve Tibbetts with us today. He's an entrepreneur, an inventor, a creator in good old Tacoma. And Steve, why don't you give us an overview of the electrically powered short distance takeoff and landing vehicle that you're under development?
Yeah, it's Steve Tibbetts here with Ziva Aero. ZivaAero.com, and we're building a personal air vehicle. So it's going to hold one person. It can land vertically, take off vertically, and it cruises at about 160 miles an hour. So the idea is to be a personal air vehicle that you could literally land and take off pretty much anywhere and travel at high speeds. And right now, with the current battery technology, it has about a 50-mile range.
So it sounds pretty awesome. So is and you're developing that right here in Tacoma, right?
Yes, 1938 Market. We're downtown Tacoma, and we're working out of Fab Lab Tacoma, which is has been a makerspace, but we've decided to incubate our own business here, and we've been working on this thing for over 2 years now.
So in terms of time, then, when do you expect it'll fly for the first time?
We hope to have it fly for the first time untethered within this month of June.
Wow. I didn't realize you guys were that close. That's awesome. So just a little plug for myself here. First of all, where will you be flying it when you fly it?
That is top secret.
Okay. So the top secret, does that mean I don't get to watch?
We can talk.
Okay. We'll talk. So, I can understand the secrecy part, because it's certainly probably everybody's going to have their fingers crossed the first time that thing goes flying by itself, right?
Correct. Yeah, it's nothing about what we're doing is easy. In fact, I don't know if you saw the news. Was it Tuesday or Wednesday? The hover bike from HoverSurf was doing a test flight in Dubai, and the pilot lost control at 100 feet and miraculously walked away from it. But they had an incident that totally destroyed their vehicle.
Yeah, well, I guess as the generals in the Marine Corps used to say, you got to expect some setbacks here and there, especially developing something as, would you say it's fair to call your design a radical design?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely unusual, but and it combines elements of the round wing, which, you know, had quite a few experiments and actually two flying aircraft that we know of that were experimented with back in the 40s and 50s. And it combines that with the newest electric drive technology. So it is kind of revolutionary in the sense that we've combined a blended wing body with the electric VTOL capability.
Okay, well, I want to talk about that blended wing body here in a second, but I'm also curious, the first flight we're talking about, and I got to say I'm intrigued that you're this close to flying this guy. Is the first flight going to be manned, or is it going to be computer controlled?
Remotely piloted.
Cool.
Put quite a few hours on this, probably hundreds of hours on it before we put a human inside.
Yep. Well, and that's really part of the tradition of development of all kinds of airborne vehicles anymore, that they're pretty well tested out, especially something as unique and new as what you're developing there before we put a person in it. So just talk a bit about the blended wing concept. What does that add that maybe other similar kinds of vehicles might not have the capability of or the value of?
Well, if you look at the machines that are out there currently flying, like the Ehang out of China, it's basically just an overgrown quad. In a quadcopter, what happens is when you lean forward, you have to lean forward to fly forward. And what happens is that you get an aerodynamic downforce on the body of the aircraft. So you're actually fighting aerodynamics. So we took that concept and we shifted it 90 degrees so that when we tip over to fly forward, we're actually gaining lift. The bottom line is it gets us efficiency and it gets us range because we can fly farther on the same amount of battery energy.
Yeah, I think that's pretty intuitively understandable for anybody that's seen the little drones flying around that we see so much anymore. And the way they go forward is to tilt forward, and then they're kind of working against themselves as opposed to creating some lift like that blended wing does. Is that pretty much a good summary of how it works?
That's a great summary. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Okay, cool. So for folks listening, I got to apologize. Every once in a while, I'm going to get a little airplane wonky here because I do have a background in airplanes and I'm intrigued by those aspects. One of the things that I can't figure out in my own head, Steve, is that blended wing. How is it controlled? I mean, how do you turn left, right, climb, descend, those kind of things?
It's all done through differential thrust. So we've got, you know, eight motors. Really, we have a pair of motors on each quadrant. And through that, we're able to control the yaw and the pitch just simply through differential thrust. We do have in the original design elevons. We don't know for sure at this point if we're going to implement that. The scale model is able to function pretty well without elevons. But it's in the back of our minds that to get more efficiently in, for example, entering into a bank turn, it may be more efficient to have elevons or some kind of a control surface.
Right. Understood. And for folks listening, that term elevon is basically combining elevator controls with aileron controls. So you're controlling pitch and roll essentially with the same control surface. Would you agree with that, Steve?
Yeah. Sorry. I don't even think about the jargon I'm using, but that's correct. It's a combination of elevator and aileron.
Yep. No worries at all. So I am interested. So what's your background that led you to come up with this concept?
I'm an EV, electric vehicle enthusiast. So I drive electric car. I've been interested in it as an electrical engineer for probably 25 years, but I had this vision of flying the small aircraft and then kind of throwing a mountain bike in the back seat and then riding the last mile. And this was back in 2004 timeframe. And what I realized is that a lot of the airports that I knew growing up as a kid were gone, and so that scheme of using general aviation to travel around really wasn't, it's not practical. And it, you know, it's frustrating to grow up in the space race era and all the aviation, cool aviation stuff going on and not really having a way to have practical use of general aviation airspace. So I just started thinking about what's the solution. And the solution that I came to, long story short, is that whatever aircraft we have for general aviation pretty much needs to be vertical takeoff and landing because all of the airports are gone. So we need aircraft that don't require airstrips. And that's, and because I'm an electrical engineer, I determined it needed to be electric. So that's how I came into it back in 2005 and wrote a grant proposal to NASA at that time, exposing my ideas and thoughts on what needed to happen to make this all work.
Well, that's an intriguing start and an intriguing concept for sure. And I My guess is that there are folks listening to this that right now they're thinking in their heads, I want one. I think you did put your website up early on, so you can go there and take a look. And there are some YouTubes that are pretty cool that you can look to get an idea of what we're talking about here in a visual way, too. So let's talk about that ordinary person here for a second. There's a lot of folks that might want to use a vehicle like this, but they're not pilots. They don't know how to fly an airplane and probably not going to. So does that mean this vehicle is out of reach for them?
No, not at all. I mean, initially, for the first probably couple of years, you will have to have a pilot's license to fly it. But there's a lot of things happening in the world that are much larger than Ziva here in Tacoma. And the example that I like to give is that Boeing is working with a company called SkyGrid to make a artificial intelligence-based air traffic management system. And that's just one of the components, one of the many components that's required that will allow anyone without a pilot's license within 5 years from now to get in the machine and just say, I want to go from point A to point B. And the machine will do all of the coordination with air traffic control system and weather checks and all that. It'll be automated. It will be completely autonomous. And that's the goal, is to make it affordable and fully autonomous by about 2026 timeframe.
Yeah, so that means it is within the reach of the layperson that doesn't really have a flying background. So I'm also wondering, I think autonomous is a key here. Anybody looking at this, I think, would agree that autonomous is a key to the long-term success. What about rideshare? Do you think that, what we call rideshare, do you think there would be an application there for this vehicle?
Well, not this specific vehicle, but maybe it's Big Brother. Uber Elevate, Uber has a program they call Elevate, and they've done a fantastic job of galvanizing the industry towards their view, which is a 100% ride-sharing view of what they call their air taxi service. And I think I'm a proponent, but I like our idea better. The reason that I don't really jive completely with Uber's model is that they're relying on the old hub and spoke model, where you're trying to force traffic into these nodes. And the beautiful thing about eVTOL, electric vertical takeoff and landing, is you can literally take off and land anywhere. So why would you need to agglomerate people in one very compact and busy port when you can spread that out? So my vision is more spread the traffic out, put people where they need to be within walking distance. So my model is a little more utopian, in the sense that I want to be able to walk to my vertiport, take my vehicle to another vertiport, and be able to walk to my destination. So it's more of a neighborhood-based vertiport, and so people can fly pretty much directly where they need to go without an intervening wheeled taxi service to take you between vertiports. I believe there's going to be room in the market for both techniques. Obviously, almost all of the big aviation companies that we know of, Bell, Boeing, you know, the newcomers, Joby, have all lined up behind Uber. And I think it's great, but I that's not my vision. My vision is personal air transportation, point to point.
So would that pretty much presume that in most cases these vehicles are going to be privately owned, individually owned?
You know, the specific business model is up for grabs. I think, you know, simplistically, yes. I mean, I want to be able to drive the price down to get it into the price range of a sports car. Initially, it'll be an exotic sports car. But over time, I think, you know, with volume of scale, we can drive the price down. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they'll be personally owned. There could be models like the, you know, for example, the Lime scooter model, where there's a company that owns and maintains the equipment. And, you know, you'll call up an application on your phone and have one of these vehicles sitting there waiting for you to take you where you need to go. So I don't, I mean, so we're somewhat agnostic on that, but But simplistically, yes, we view vehicle ownership as the ultimate goal.
Okay, cool. So let's say we got a guy who owns one of these. He lives up near Point Defiance somewhere. He works in an office downtown Tacoma. So it's his work day, and he walks out the door. What happens then? And just kind of what's the overview or the big picture of him getting from A to B?
He would walk to his neighborhood vertiport and get in his vehicle that's perhaps parked there. And he would fly into, in this case, if you wanted to go downtown, he would fly into this Tacoma City Central vertiport and then walk to from that vertiport to his destination, or if necessary, take an Uber.
Okay, cool. Gotcha. So sounds like a great way to get to work, especially. Well, what about if somebody lived in Tacoma and they worked up in Seattle? Because we all know the nightmare of I-5. So what's that going to do to the commute to Seattle?
Well, it certainly will make it a 10-minute ordeal instead of a, 50-minute plus ordeal. But it's, I don't know that it's going to have a huge impact on the traffic on the ground. There's a number of studies that have been done that show that if you have less traffic, or if your traffic is, the traffic will fill up whatever void there is, I guess is how I would say it.
Yeah.
But for some people that choose to do this, it shortens their commute significantly. But I think that, another interesting aspect of it is that all of a sudden barriers like water in the Puget Sound area are no longer a factor. So you can live on islands that aren't even served by ferries and stuff. So it's going to have an interesting impact on real estate. And I haven't quite figured out exactly what that's going to be yet. If my crystal ball was ideal, I'd probably start thinking about buying some real estate on an island.
Yeah, you change the infrastructure like this, and the ramifications can kind of go on and on. So this same guy who's commuting up to Seattle, one of the things is a pilot I wonder about. Let's say that this kind of vehicle takes off in terms of popularity, and there's several hundred of them headed for Seattle on Monday morning. How are these guys going to stay separated? How are they going to keep from running into each other?
Well, that air traffic management system that I referred to earlier called SkyGrid would manage that. Of course, that ultimately these vehicles will also have, traffic detectors and a advanced form of ADS-B within the vehicle. So, there's the vehicle will be aware of other vehicles around it. But the ultimate goal is to have a central air traffic management system direct each vehicle where they need to be in any given time to maintain separation between vehicles.
Got it. I think I've got it. I've seen computer models of a traffic control system for on the ground where a centralized computer is keeping autonomous vehicles separated, kind of obviating the need for traffic lights and things like that, and the traffic can move really way more efficiently than it does now because of that coordination. So this, what you're talking about, sounds a little bit like that kind of concept.
Yes, that's right. Okay. It's a big investment, but I don't think that it's an extremely difficult problem. I think my opinion is that autonomy will happen in the air before it happens on the ground. It's an easier problem to solve. On the ground, you've got all these boundary conditions and issues with the things on the side of the road. It's difficult for the computer to distinguish between a mailbox and a kid on a scooter. And those are the kind of things that just don't exist in the sky. Are there other vehicles that you have to avoid, or birds? Yes. But, it's easier to detect that there's something there and avoid it. You don't even have to really understand what it is, just go around it. So I think that my opinion is autonomy will happen, in a safe way. It'll happen in the air before it happens on the ground.
Makes sense. So this is kind of a pilot perspective question also. So things quit. We just know that. And so let's say I'm flying along and one of the props quits turning for whatever reason. There's a mechanical malfunction or the electrical power has been interrupted or what? What happens then?
Well, our machine does have some level of redundancy, so we can lose up to two motors and still, you know, maintain flight. We also plan to have what's called a ballistic recovery parachute system. For those of that don't know about that, it's basically a rocket-propelled parachute, and the rocket's used to pull the parachute out rapidly from its casing to deploy it much, much quicker in just, you know, a couple of, you know, half of a second. And they work great. That's a technology that's constantly evolving right now. And they say that they, you know, the safe zone, what they call the safe zone, keeps getting lower and lower. In other words, if you're flying along at 1,000 feet, there's no problem getting your parachute deployed in time. If you're flying at 200 feet, anything below 200 feet is kind of like the death zone because you don't have enough time to get the parachute deployed and open before the ground happens. But they're improving that all the time. They're you know, they got techniques where the rockets can actually help open the chute as well as deploy it. So that's kind of what our target is. And the other thing, unique thing about our machine is that it's not designed for hovering around at, you know, 20 miles an hour. Our goal is to get up and get going, you know, almost within, you know, within 5 seconds or 10 seconds, so that you're transitioning into flight mode where you have a lot more safety, not only because you're either farther above the ground, but because you're not relying on the motors to keep you aloft. You're developing lift on the blended wing body. So there's a number of factors that we're thinking about in terms of safety. That's kind of our plan at this moment.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that chute concept would be very reassuring to a lot of folks. Now, I'm not real knowledgeable about general aviation, but I believe there is a light single engine airplane right now that's got a parachute that will parachute the aircraft to the ground if the engine quits. Is that right?
Yeah, there's a number of them. The company Cirrus has an aircraft that they've had out for many years that has had a ballistic recovery chute. So the technology is kind of proven out there. And there's, you know, every day there's new manufacturers that will provide that as an option.
Cool. So a little change of direction here. Of course, our program is about climate. So what do you think, if anything, or if you've thought about this, the impact of this kind of vehicle would be on carbon emissions, which, of course, are a concern to people who are paying attention?
Yeah, interesting. I think that it will definitely have an improved reduction in carbon footprint. A, it's an electric vehicle, and B, it's more efficient. There's a study that was commissioned by Ford about a year ago, and they looked at how energy efficient eVTOLs were with respect to wheeled vehicles and wheeled electric vehicles. And what they found under certain trip scenarios, the electric aircraft were actually more efficient even than electric ground vehicles in terms of energy use. And so I think that there's a real gain there. The other thing that I like to think about is that with this new paradigm shift of air travel and electric air travel, it's going to compel more people to opt for an electric vehicle and kind of force the hand into the conversion to electricity, which, you know, people argue is, you know, can be just as dirty as oil. But I think there's a lot of false information out there that derives that statement.
Yep. Well, I certainly agree with you on that. I drive an electric vehicle also. In fact, I did a program or two kind of addressing some of this false information that's out there. That addressing false information seems like it's a bottomless pit, but nevertheless, we try. So you made a little allusion early on that in the future, you may be considering a vehicle that will carry more than one person. Did I hear you correctly on that?
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, we, We started with one for, you know, we got some marketing research data that kind of indicated that this is, that a one person vehicle is where we should start. And the reasoning is 73% of us commute solo. And I mean, just my gut feel says that number is probably low. So we like our personal automobiles. We like to ride in them by ourselves to work, whether we like it or not, but that's what we do. And so it just totally makes sense. The most efficient way to move a person around is with a vehicle that's designed to move a single person around. But, you know, then you talk about, you know, kids and groceries and, you know, wanting to do things together. And it makes sense to expand our portfolio over time to have multiple passengers.
Okay, good. Makes great sense, because we do know that most of the cars that are out there on the highway just have one person in them anyway. Well, we're about to the end here, Steve. Anything else you'd like to throw in before we finish up?
No, I mean, I really appreciate the opportunity to speak. And I do think that this technology has the ability to help green up the planet. You know, both not only in terms of energy use for transportation, but, you know, cement and concrete and asphalt they all create a lot of require a lot of energy and also emit a lot of CO2. And, you know, we can have more green by having less concrete. And if we can walk between our vehicles and our place of work or residence, that's even better.
Yeah, that's a great point, which I hadn't actually thought of, because this vehicle absolutely doesn't require any additional infrastructure than what we've already got. And it's going to free up infrastructure in a sense that maybe can be used for greener purposes. So you want to give out your web or contact information again real quick in case anybody wants to learn more?
Sure. It's zevaero.com, Z-E-V-A. AERO.com. And, you know, if they want to reach me directly, my email is just steve at zevaero.com.
Okay. Awesome. And so, I really appreciate the time, Steve. And, I'm hoping that I'm on the list to, be around, if not for the first flight early on, because I'm really intrigued by your project and just wish you all the best going forward.
Great. Thanks, John. Yeah, we'll certainly let you know.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, there we go. Really intriguing project taking place right here in Tacoma. You know, it's easy for me to focus on the problems related to our future around climate, but there's a lot of really cool stuff out there too. There's things that are going to be green and fun and high-tech and leading edge, and they're going to make our lives more interesting. So let's don't lose track of that, and this project that Steve Tibbetts is doing could come underneath that heading. By the way, I just want to throw out, there's a movie called 2040, and it's doing what I'm talking about. It's looking at the future, at what a positive and bright place the future could be if we take the right steps. I'd love to hear back from you. My email is John, J-O-H-N, at cctacoma.org. The CCL is for Citizens Climate Lobby, and I'll respond to every email that I receive. And also just saying that cctacoma.org is our local Citizens Climate Lobby website. You can go there, a lot of cool stuff, news and how to join and what we're up to and a forum and so on and so forth. So check it out. Well, that's it for today. It's been great talking to you, and I'm reminding you once again, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.